Okay, we're learning, Tanya. We are by chapter 4. I received actually an interesting question regarding Tanya. The question was, I heard, this is what the person said, I heard that you can only learn like one, two chapters of Tanya for non-Jews. And the rest of the book you shouldn't learn. The truth is, I think it's a very big mistake. Because even though some ideas do not apply to non-Jews, clearly, but I would say the more than 90% of the book does apply to non-Jews. Of course, you have to understand which parts yes, in which way, what's the message. Yeah, okay, that's my job, so to speak. But definitely applies, definitely. And furthermore, the second part of Tanya entirely applies to non-Jews. Because talking about that Hashem is one, God is one. And non-Jews also have to understand this and live this and so on. Okay, let's go. Chapter 4. Up to chapter 3, we understood that there is a soul, and there's actually two souls, one by the Jew, additional by the non-Jew, the Nefesh Elokis, the godly soul, and we explained what the expression of this would be in a non-Jew, the drive and desire to connect to godliness, and we understood the structure, intellectual part of the soul, the emotional part of the soul, that it's important to understand that these are not really parts. I don't have a better word, but it's just expressions of the soul. So you cannot divide the soul into parts. And then chapter 4 is going to talk about a different expression of the soul. Ve'oid. Furthermore, yesh lechol nefesh elokis sheloisha levushim. Every godly soul, that the truth is, it also applies to the other soul, to the non-godly soul, and to any human being's soul, there are shloisha levushim, three garments. Shemachshava dibur u'maaseh. These garments are thought, speech, and action. Now, since the Alter Rebbe started talking about, in chapter 2, about the godly soul, and he didn't, at no point, he didn't go back to the animal soul. So he continues explaining this godly soul. But that's why he's going to bring an example of what does it mean, these three guards, what do they mean, thought, speech, and action, by the godly soul. That's why he directly talks about this. But of course, the animal soul also has thought, speech, and action, but none of the same subject, of course, of food, of drinking, and partying and so on. Okay, let's go back to the godly soul. Shel Tariag Mitzvah Satoira, talking the subject of the 613 commandments of the Torah, expressed in thought, speech, and action. What does that mean? Shekeshia the Mekaim Bemaise called Mitzvah Maisiois. When a person fulfills in actuality, in action, all the practical commandments. And with his speech, he works, so to speak, to understand the explanation of the 613 commandments and their laws. You talk about it, you learn Torah about those laws. And with your thought, you grasp everything that you can grasp of the Pardes. I'll explain in a second what this means. Of the Torah, Pardes means a garden. That's the literal translation. But it's actually four words put up in one word. Pardes is Pshat Remez Drushit Soit. This garden of the Torah means the simple meaning of everything, every single subject in the Torah, the allusions it does, that's Remez, allusions, then Drush, allegories and examples and teachings, and then Soit means secrets, Kabbalah and all of this. Of the Torah. So when a person understands, knows as much as he can of every single corner of the Torah, parentheses, since this is a class for non-Jews, that doesn't mean that non-Jews have to understand every single corner of the Torah. No, the Talmud says clearly in Sanhedrin that when a non-Jew learns Torah, he's like a Kohen Gadol, like a high priest. And the Talmud questions this idea. What do you mean like a high priest? We learned that a non-Jew that learns Torah actually is chayav misa, he's liable of death penalty. So what are you talking about, a high priest, death penalty, how does it go together? And the answer is very simple. When the non-Jew is working hard, even deeply, in understanding his seven commandments with all the ramifications, he is like a high priest. But when he goes out of this subject and starts learning things that are not supposed to be for them, it's like stealing. That's one of the explanations the Talmud gives. It's like stealing the Torah from the Jews. Therefore, definitely a non-Jew has to learn Torah, the parts of the Torah that apply to him, the seven commandments and their ramifications, which is quite a lot. There's a lot of stuff to learn, not to be worried. A lot of stuff to learn, and deep stuff also. Now, let's go back to the Tanya. He's talking about a Jew, of course. So when the Jew, again, he does in action every single mitzvah he can do, any talks, learning, every single mitzvah he can learn about, the laws of the mitzvahs, any knows, machshava in this case, thought, doesn't mean I'm thinking about buying an ice cream. Should I? No, that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about knowing things. You have knowledge in your head. It's part of you. That's the knowledge he's talking about. That's machshava. That's the thought he's talking about. You know Torah as much as you can. What's going to happen? Hariklo, lustariage, varin, nafshoi. Comes out that, in general, the 613 members, organs of your body, of your soul, melubashim betariag mitzvahs haTorah, are close within the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. Why? Because again, you're doing with your body, with your soul, with all your strengths. You're doing what you have to do. You're talking what you have to talk, and you're knowing what you have to know. Therefore, you're completely involved in Torah mitzvahs. Ube pratius. And if you want to understand this in a more detailed way, chinas chabad shebenafshoi melubashes besagas haTorah. The intellectual part of the soul, which is the Adelt Rebbe defined in chapter 3, Chabad, Chochma bin Das, wisdom, understanding, and knowledge, or whatever that means, that's invested into understanding, knowing Torah. Shumasik bepardes kifi yecholes hasagosoi, v'sheresh nafshe lemailo. That a person grasps and understands of these gardens, so to speak, of the Torah, pardes, pshat, remes, drushen, soit, whatever they mean, according to your capacity, your brain, so to speak, and according to the root of your soul. There are souls that have greater capacity, and that has no relationship with the brain. Like, some brains are more refined, and therefore they can understand better things, and some brains are less refined, not a problem. That's the vessel in which the capacity of understanding of the soul gets invested. So when a person actually works, and this is something interesting in neuroscience, like modern things, when a person really works with the brain, new neurons get created, new connections between the neurons, new pathways, neural pathways, and so on. We can change the brain, literally. The brain has plasticity. It's not a standard thing, set up and that's it, that's what you have. No way, you can change it, definitely. So the more you work in understanding things and the deeper you work, the more refined your brain is going to be, definitely. And of course, the same thing happens the other way around. The less you work with your brain, just with any other muscle, the less you're going to understand, no problem. That's the way it works. But that's all by the brain. That's, again, the vessel. But then you have the soul. The soul itself has a capacity. So even if your brain is such a great brain, but if your soul is not such a great soul, so whatever, the person is not going to understand so much. And the other way around also, you can have a great, amazing, holy soul, but the brain is not such a good brain, and therefore the person is not going to understand so much Torah. But this is how Chabad, the intellectual part of the soul, gets invested in the brain to understand the more you can, as much as you can, and as much as the source of your soul allows you. Ve'amidois, and the emotional attributes, shen iro ve'avo ve'ampeyim, that they are fear and love, and all the ramifications and all the children, so to speak, that they have, everything that is derived from these two main emotional attributes, melubashes, bekiuma, mitzvot, v'maise, u'bedibur. They get invested, the emotional attributes, in the fulfillment of the commandments, in actuality, in action, and in speech. Shutalmu Torah, shekineged kulan. That is actually the speech is learning Torah, which is as much as important as every single other mitzvah together, all the rest of the mitzvahs together. Why? Because what the Alter Rebbe said, it's weird. If you actually pay attention, okay, I got it. The brain, so to speak, of the soul, the intellect of the soul gets invested in the brain, understanding. Okay, I got it. Understanding, brain, intellect. That's good. But then he said something weird. He said emotional attributes, love and fear, that's connected to action. Really? How? If you're going to tell me that's connected to the heart, okay, the heart is the vessel for the feelings, very nice. But action, speech, like when you learn Torah, you're expressing love for God. When you actually do a mitzvah, you're expressing love and fear for God. Why? What's the connection between feelings and action? That's what the Alter Rebbe just said. So he explains. Usually in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe never asks questions. Usually. Sometimes, yeah, but the question, you don't see it. You just see the answer. So you have to think, what's going on over here? Why did he say this? Because he had a question. And now he's answering. Key, because, so he's answering, because Ahava Yishoyrish Kol Ramach Mitzvah. Love for God is the root of all the 248 positive commandments. Umimena em nimshachos, and they actually get projected, so to speak. These commandments, the actual fulfillment of the commandments, comes from love. Ubilada, and without love for God, ein laim kiyum amiti. You never have real fulfillment of the mitzvahs. Real means, at least in a simple, very, very simple way, real means that it actually stands in time. You might do one thing, like you only do real good for other people when you love them. You might do something good for somebody else, even if you don't love them, but you're not going to do it for a long time. Maybe once, okay, I can do a favor of somebody else, not a problem. I'm a good guy, so I'll do a favor. And over here, love doesn't mean like romantic love. I love you, my dear. No, no, that's not talking about that. Love means you want to get close to this person, to these people, to God. You want to be close to him. That's what love means over here. And fear means not that you want to get far from him, but you're afraid. Like it's too much. You're in awe of God. So love for God is the source of 248 positive commandments. And from the love of God, a person actually goes and does something for God, so to speak. And without the love of God, even if you actually did some mitzvahs, it's not a real fulfillment, amiti, it's not kiyum amiti. Ki amekayim an be'emes, hua oyves Hashem, v'chofetz edav kaboy be'emes. Because a real fulfillment, a person that really fulfills the mitzvahs, is a person that loves God and desires to attach himself really to God, be'emes, in truth, to God. Ve'i epshal ledav kaboy be'emes, ki im bekiyum ramach pikudim. And there's no possibility of actually attaching yourself to God really, in truth, except for the fulfillment of the 248 commandments. That's the tool he gave us to actually get together with him, be close to him, to attach to him. Why? Shehem ramach ivarim demalko kaviyachon. Because these 248 commandments are not just commandments that God decided to give us. These commandments are actually, this is a phrase from the Zohar, 248 limbs of the king, so to speak, as it's written somewhere else. The Alter Rebbe is not going to explain. What does it mean, limbs of the king? The king doesn't have limbs, God doesn't have limbs, doesn't have a body, doesn't have anything like that. What is he talking about? And the idea is like this. What's written somewhere else? The idea is like this. A limb in a body, in our body, projects from the soul a specific strength to do something, to work in some way. For instance, the eyes, like the balls of the eyes, they project from the soul the capacity of seeing, re'iya, sight. The ears and all the muscles inside of them, the ears and so on, they project the capacity of hearing. And so on, all the parts of the body. That means that there's a, in Hebrew we say kli, there's a vessel, and there's a oir, light, so to speak, in that vessel. That light can only actually function in that particular vessel. Because I can't see with my hands, or I can't see with my stomach. No, impossible. I see with my eyes, and I touch with my hands, and I digest with my stomach. All those things, seeing, touching, and so on, are powers of the soul, that they invest in particular vessels of the soul that are proper for that particular strength of the soul. Again, the eyes to see, the mouth to talk, and so on. That's what it means, that every single mitzvah is actually a limb of God. What are you talking about? Again, God doesn't have a body. What it means is that each mitzvah projects a specific strength, light, power, energy, call it whatever you want, of God. That when a person, actually a Jew, fulfills a specific mitzvah, that energy is projected in his life, in his body. The Rebbe is going to say this later, much later, in his life, in his body, in the world. And if the Jew does not fulfill this mitzvah, this light is not projected. And this energy is different by every mitzvah. That's what is called 248 positive commandments and limbs. Each mitzvah projects a different light of godliness into the world, into your soul, into your body, and so on. So again, what's the continuation over here? The Alter Rebbe is saying like this. First of all, the intellectual part of the soul gets invested in the brain and to understand Torah and the laws of the Torah and so on. The second part is the emotional attributes, which are mainly two, and the rest are just derivatives of those two, love and fear, fear and love. They actually get into action and into speech. Whatever mitzvah is only done with speech, like learning Torah, you don't have to do anything, you just have to talk, learn, and so on. Or saying the Shema, you don't have to do anything else but to pronounce with your words, with your mouth, Shema Israel, and so on. So those mitzvahs project a specific light into the world, and those are the channels to actually attach yourself to God. But you're only going to attach yourself to God if you love Him. Why? Again, very simple. Imagine a person sitting very comfortable in the couch, watching the latest movie, and he's so happy, drinking a beer, and somebody says, "Can you do a favor for me? Now? You want a favor for me now? I'm busy," quote unquote. "I'm watching the latest movie. I'm so happy, drinking my beer. Very, very nice over here. What do you want from me? Leave me alone." Unless you love the person. If you really love the person, okay. This person for me is more important than the movie and the beer and blah, blah, blah. And therefore I'm going to stop all of this and I'm going to do a favor for you. But if you don't love the person, you're not going to do it. Don't bother me now. I'm busy. That's what the Alter Rebbe says, very simple. That again, the emotional attributes, love and fear, fear and love, they get invested into action and speech because God is asking us constantly, so to speak, leave your comfort zone and go do a mitzvah, so to speak, for me, says God. Do it for me. I'm asking you. Yeah, but I'm very comfortable here sleeping in my bed. And you're asking me to wake up and do this and that? Come on. So you're only going to do it, at least keep doing it in time. Maybe one time I do a favor for you. So, but don't bother anymore. Like, Last year already I did a favor for you, so you're asking me again. Come back in 2 years, maybe I'll do another favor for you, maybe. So that's the subject, the idea. That's about love. Love takes a person to, again, leave your comfort zone and go do something for somebody else. Ve'ha'ira, in the second part, fear for God, is the source of this 365 negative, so to speak, commandments. Don't do this and that. Why? What's the connection, just as we asked before, what's the connection between a feeling of fear, which means actually awe, but whatever, we spoke about this in the last chapter also, a feeling for of fear and doing or not doing. Why? Because a person fears to rebel against the King of all kings, the Holy One, blessed be He. You don't want to rebel against Him. You're not afraid of the punishment. That's not what He's talking about. That's a different type of fear. You actually don't want to rebel to the greatest King of all kings. Or Yira Pnimis Mizu, or something much deeper, a more inner fear. Shemishboishes Migdulose. You're actually embarrassed of the greatness of the King. You know He's looking at you and you're rebelling against the King. Aren't you embarrassed? Like a regular person would not do certain activities. If you know somebody's looking, but if I know nobody's looking, I could do it. What's the problem? But if you know they're looking at you, you're not going to do it. This is something deeper within a person. You're embarrassed of God. Velasas Rabbe Eina, and to do something bad in the eyes of God. He's looking at me. He knows what I'm doing. Kol toyavat Hashem asher sonei, hemaklipos b'sitra achra, all the abominable things that God hates, which is actually klipa. I'm not going to explain, because the Alter Rebbe is going to explain in chapter 6 and 7, very long, what this means. Klipa means a shell. But over here means impurity, and sitra achra, also the other side, the Alter Rebbe is going to explain himself. Asher yenikasa meha adam atachton, that they, the impurity in the world, let's call it evil in the world, and more details are going to come in chapter 6 and 7. Let's just call it klipa, evil, shell, whatever, the other side. And they get nurtured, actually, from the man down here, from the person down here. Ve'achizasam boy who b'shasam mitzvot lo yisaseh. And they are actually grabbing a person in this level of 365 commandments, negative commandments. Why? What is he talking about? The positive commandments we explained before, they bring down godliness in the world. They bring down, so to speak, God in the world. Like the limbs, they bring down some power of the soul. Every commandment is a limb, quote unquote, of God. They bring down a divine energy in the world. But the 365 commandments, they don't bring down anything, because you're not doing anything, actually. When God says, don't do this, okay, I'm going to sit over here and I'm going to do it. I'm not going to do it. Like, don't kill. Okay, so I see my neighbor passing over there. I want to kill him, but I'm not going to do it, so... Did you do anything? No. Actually, I did not do it. I would have, but I did not do it. I didn't kill anybody. So you're not projecting, because in order to project something, you have to go and do something. Over here, not projecting. What are you doing? When a person, God forbid, transgresses one of these commandments, but negative commandments, there are many explanations of this. This is one of them. I think it's the simplest. You're actually making holes in your soul, in the world, in a spiritual way. You're making holes. And through those holes, the energy that was supposed to be held by you actually goes somewhere else. I have a cup, and I drink water with my cup. If I start making holes in my cup, the water is going to fall, probably, most probably, in a place where I did not want some water, like my computer and my desk and my papers. No. You don't want water over there. water is supposed to be in the cup. But in order for the water to be in the cup, it has to be complete, no holes. When a Jew, and I stressed this before and I did not explain, and I'll explain in a second. When a Jew actually transgresses one of these negative commandments, he's starting making holes in his own soul and through his own soul in the whole world, to the point that it's even brought down in different places, in Kabbalah and Hasidus. You're making holes in the name of God, so to speak. Because every energy in the world comes through the name of God, whatever the explanation is. So by those holes, when a person actually makes those holes, the energy that was supposed to be contained in your own soul starts going somewhere else. And the truth is, and Dal Rebbe is going to say it later, much later, in actually chapter 6, 7, 8, Dal Rebbe says something very, very hard. But it's just, it's not actually Dal Rebbe, it comes from Kabbalah. The idea comes from Kabbalah. And the idea is like this. The impurity in the world, evil in the world, klipa, shell, sitra achra, the other side, all these things all together, which is actually everything is the same. The Talmud says that the Satan, Yetzer Hara, Malach HaMaves, like the evil in the world, is actually everything is the same. Akol Echad, everything is the same. It's just the evil in the world. The Alter Rebbe is going to explain why it exists, but later, not now. Now, evil doesn't have energy from God, from the innermost part of God. I know this is not directly the subject Dal Rebbe is talking about right now, but I think it's important to explain. Evil gets energy from God also. God is the one creating evil. There's nothing else but God. He creates evil. For what? Simplest explanation, for the man to choose. If you only have godliness, you can't choose between good and bad. There's only good. So of course you're going to behave good because there's only good. So when there's good and there's evil, then you can choose between good and evil. Okay. Evil in the world, again, is created by God in order to give the human being the possibility of free will, choosing between good and bad, good and evil, good. But the evil, the way God creates it, is not by wanting really the evil. What God really wants is the good, is that we should choose good. But in order for us to choose good, so he creates evil. Now that means that God indirectly wants evil also to exist, but not to be chosen for you to choose good. That's what he wants. Therefore, the evil gets indirect energy from God, because it's created because I need these in order to get to that. I don't really need these, but okay, I'm going to create these in order to reach that. And what's the main will of evil? To receive inner energy, direct energy from God. That's what I want. I never get this. Where can I get this? Oh, through a Jew. The Jew gets direct energy from God. That's what Alter Rebbe actually explains in the third part of time. The evil wants the inner strength and power energy from God. How can I get that? You have to get a Jew. When you get a Jew and you actually make him do evil, you will receive the Jew energy, the energy of the Jew. This Jew gets energy from God directly, and that's what you want. So grab a Jew, make him do an Aveda, a transgression, and you will receive the energy that this guy has inside of him for any mitzvah that he might have done throughout his life. And the worst part of it, and Alter Rebbe is going to say it later, not today, not in this chapter, when the evil actually extracted every single drop of direct energy from the Jew, bye-bye, I don't need you anymore. You have nothing for me. I don't need you. It's like a lemon. When you extracted all the juice of the lemon, what do you do with the rest? Just throw it in the garbage. That's what actually happens to a Jew, that the evil extracted every single drop of good energy, so to speak, direct energy from him. That's it. Bye-bye. You're alone. All the time that the Jew still has some energy to be extracted from him, he looks successful and he's on top of the mountain and he's so good and life is so good. at the moment, even though he's a transgressor, but at the moment that his energy finished, that's it, you're done. Klipa doesn't want you anymore. You're useless. You don't have energy for it. It leaves you and it goes look for another Jew. Now, having said all of this, again, when a person, when a Jew transgresses one of the 365 negative commandments, he's making holes in his own soul and the energy starts getting lost from him. It's like making holes in a cup. Exactly the same, and the water just gets lost. Okay, why am I stressing so much a Jew? Because the Alter Rebbe says clearly, and this is based in Kabbalah, it's based in different places, in Zohar also, the Alter Rebbe says clearly in different Hasidic discourses that when a non-Jew fulfills a mitzvah of a Jew that he was not commanded, and the example he gives is tefillin like phylacteries, whatever, put in the head and the arm, black leather boxes, whatever they are, it's the same. When this non-Jew puts it on, it's exactly the same as if it were in the table and nobody put it on. It's not accomplishing anything. So going back again to what the Alter Rebbe said before, by the 248 commandments, you project a light, stop. That's talking about a Jew. The non-Jew doing exactly the same commandment does not project the light. Yeah, but Alter Rebbe said, yeah, he's talking about a Jew. Now, having said all of this, same thing happens with the transgressions. He's not necessarily making holes in his soul. It's a different system. Having said all of that, the Rambam says clearly that when a non-Jew wants to fulfill a mitzvah, even though he was not commanded to do so, he can do it, except for learning Torah, the parts that are not for non-Jews, except for Shabbos, it's not for non-Jews. And actually, there's a commentary of the Radvaz, Rav David Zimri, he was the teacher of the Arizal, so you can imagine what kind of guy he was. He lived in Egypt. He wrote a commentary on some parts of the Rambam, and he brings over there, very interestingly, not everybody agrees to this, and to be honest, I shouldn't say this, but I can't hold myself. The Divine Code does not agree to this. I'm gonna say it anyway. So I don't agree to the Divine Code on this one, because the Radvaz says, it's not me, it's the Radvaz, that he gets a reward, the non-Jew gets a reward for fulfilling a mitzvah. It's not the same type of reward that a Jew gets. There are two categories. Category number one, metzuva ve'ois, a person that got commanded to do something and he does it. So he gets a reward. God commanded, you did it. Says God, no? I'm going to give you a reward. And then there's ein metzuva ve'ois. Somebody was not commanded to do and he does it anyway. He also gets a reward, but it's a less level reward. Why? A person might ask, it's the other way around. When you're obligated to do it and you do it, so you get a reward, get out of here. But if you're not obligated and you do it anyway, I get a greater reward. No, it's the other way around. Why? Because what's a commandment? The commandment means a connection to God. It's a link to God. So if God gave you a commandment and you do it, okay, you got attached to God and you get a reward. But if God did not command you and you do it, who told you you're getting connected to God? God didn't tell that. God didn't say that. So he only said, I'm going to give you a reward, but it's as not as holy, high, big. I don't know how to define it because I never saw anyone defining this kind of reward. But you're going to get a reward. That's fine. And the Radvaz says clearly, you get a reward. A non-Jew gets a reward when he does a mitzvah that he's not commanded to, as if he was not commanded, and he does it anyway. However, and the Radvaz says it, there are certain mitzvahs I don't like. Like, I don't agree, the Radvaz says, and one of them, he says, tefillin. Tefillin, mezuzah, sefer Torah, he says, those mitzvahs, no. For non-Jews, no. But this is the explanation of what the Alter Rebbe just brought over here, that the emotional attributes of the soul get invested into actions. The love for God gets invested into doing the commandments, again, because in order to leave the comfort zone, you have to actually love the other person, and the fear and all the ramifications of love and fear, and the fear gets invested into not doing what you don't have to do, because you fear rebelling against the king, or furthermore, it embarrasses you to rebel against the king.